The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Ed Martin here at the Pro America Report, and a lot happening as we head into the weekend. I will, I'm going to play again the Karen Garnett interview from a few days ago about the National Pro-Life Luncheon. It's gotten some good traction from folks, so we'll play that in a few moments. We'll also visit with another author today, Mark David Hall, about his new book. But first, what you need to know, what you need to know today, today's wink. Here on the Pro America Report, I'm Ed Martin, by the way, your fearless host. And but today I want to encourage you to understand that sometimes silence is cover. Silence is cover. And I'm not talking, by the way, about these leaks yet. I'm not talking about some of these other issues. I'm talking about this story. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California is almost 90 years old. And she has been in some declining health in the last couple of years, but that's okay. I mean, she's in her late 80s, and she has had a long career, and she's very liberal, and I don't like any of her politics, but she's been in service she's been serving forever. But now she had shingles, and she couldn't come to Washington, D.C. And Fetterman, the Pennsylvania senator, was in the hospital. And Blumenthal, the late 70s, I think he's, I didn't know he's so old. He broke his leg. There's lots of senators that aren't making it to the session. But here's the thing. Judiciary Committee is where Dianne Feinstein has served for a couple of decades. And in order to advance nominees from that committee, the to have their members there. And since she's not there, she cannot vote to advance the nominees. These are judges. These are lifetime tenure judges. And what everybody has shown, whether it was Mitch McConnell when Donald Trump was president or Chuck Schumer when Joe Biden is president, is they know the math and they know how, once they get out of committee, to go to the floor of the Senate at the right time and pass nominees. Joe Biden has had as many, in fact, he's had more nominees confirmed as lifetime tenure federal judges, more than Trump by this point in his presidency. So, and Trump was really good at it. Trump and McConnell, their teams worked really well together. But here's the wrinkle. What you're not hearing, there was one story about it and went away, is that in order for Chuck Schumer to replace Senator Dianne Feinstein on the Judiciary Committee, as she has requested, he needs to go to the floor of the U.S. Senate, and he needs to either get unanimous consent, which means everybody agrees, no one objects, or he has to force through by cloture, 60 votes, a change in that committee structure, that committee membership. And Republicans should not help. They should not help. The Democrats, when they get in similar positions, they don't help. The liberals don't help. They play hardball. And the hardball should just be Rand Paul or Josh Hawley or someone should not consent unanimously and force a vote and put people on the record and make them have to vote for it, because these are really important judgeships, positions, and they should not be. We should not decide suddenly, oh, we're going to play along nice with people. And back to my point, what you need to know is it's quiet. It's quiet. No coverage. No media coverage, no talking about it. There was one article that referenced this. And the reason why? Because the establishment in Washington, both parties, when they need to do something that they know is unpopular, they, if they can get away with it, they say nothing. They go quiet on it. So there's not coverage. The coverage is non-existent. As I said, one article in Politico. Now, I actually have noticed that a couple of conservatives, and myself included, have been pushing on social media saying, hey, don't fall for this. But we'll see if it's enough, because generally, especially when it's, the kind of the coming out of Easter break and there's not a lot of senators and most of you go to the Hill this week, the Senate and House are out of session, which means a lot of staffers and others have taken vacation, taken days off. You know, they're catching up families on kids are on spring break or something. So it's very quiet. And that includes the journalists. That includes the media. So it will be interesting to see if this story will get some traction. But it quite literally could mean that 10 or 20 or 30 judges would not be confirmed, or at least delay the schedule enough that it would end up getting towards the election cycle when there might be a change in leadership. That may seem like hardball, but that's what both parties do when they want to. And the Republicans don't do it when they think, I don't know, when they think that charmed into it. Oh, Dianne Feinstein, she served all these years. She asked for something. So what? She's gotten lots of somethings over the years. She's gotten lots of power and influence. You know, she just sold her home. She has a home. Her and her husband are fabulously wealthy. I think her husband made money. I think he was a wealthy guy before she was in politics, but I don't know. Who knows? I mean, they have a multi-million dollar home in Montana or Wyoming or somewhere that they just were selling. I think that's the coverage I saw. But my point here is she's had plenty of favors. She's had plenty of stature. She's had plenty of opportunities. She's had plenty of respect, if that's what you want to show her. But to give Biden and Schumer and the left judges, when they are in the midst of lawfare, as clear as can be against Trump and January 6th defendants and lots of other aspects, lots of other examples, it's just crazy. So what you need to know is silence on a story means they're trying to slip it through. Lack of coverage on a story means that they're trying to make it happen and not make it a big deal. Oh, yeah, just being respectful. Imagine if Ted Cruz was wanting to come off Judiciary Committee during President Trump's time. Do you think Chuck Schumer would be like, oh, yeah, well, we'll unanimously consent to that? No way. Not in a million years. Not in a million years. So stand tall, Republicans in the Senate. Don't give in to the Feinstein swap and fight for judges. All right, that's all I've got. We'll take a break. When we come back, we've got a lot more, especially we'll get an update. We'll play again the Karen Garnett interview, important event taking place just about a week from now down in Dallas for Pro-Life. Be right back. Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Talk to you in a moment. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro-America Report. It's been a while, actually. I was thinking about it, Karen, as Karen Garnett is our next guest. She's the president of the National Prayer Luncheon for Life. Of course, I saw you, Karen, a few months ago in Washington, D.C., came out for the March for Life. We've talked a couple other times, but it's amazing how fast time flies. We're up again in just a few weeks. We'll have the National Prayer Luncheon for Life in Dallas, Texas. Such a unique thing, Karen, such a unique idea. And it's not new anymore. It's unique because it's been, I don't know, remind me how many years it's been already, but walk us through what the National Prayer Luncheon for Life and what that's meant and where we are as of today.
Yes. Thank you so much, Ed. Thank you for having me back. This is actually my third time to be on with you about National Prayer Luncheon for Life.
Right,
and it began back in 2021 as a new vision by our CEO at Heroic Media. Heroic Media is the parent company for National Prayer Luncheon for Life. And Brett Atterbury used to be a counter prayer and fundraising luncheon against Planned Parenthood, their local in Dallas, Texas, their local annual awards luncheon. And 5 days before the pandemic in 2020, we both outnumbered and outraised them. We had 3,000 people in person at ours and raised $1.8 million. And they had 1,000 people at theirs and they raised 1.1. But then the pandemic was announced 5 days later. The world changed. So much went virtual. And Brett was elevated to CEO at November 1 of 2020. And the Holy Spirit gave him a whole new vision. And he said, you know what? This is really, really meant to be an hour of prayer. And let's turn outward. Let's not make it a fundraiser about ourselves and our mission, but let's present an annual pro-life impact award and distribute pro-life impact grants to amazing high impact pro-life organizations. So that began in 2021. The first year we gave three grants totaling $85,000. And then last year, we upgraded it to six grants totaling $100,000.
Wow.
And yeah, it's so like everybody can participate. That's something we love about this. This is for the entire pro-life community across the country and internationally. We already have votes in from 28 countries outside of the U.S. for this year's. And it's actually next week, Ed. It's next Friday, April the 21st is the day, 12 to 1 Central Time. We call it the Hour of Power Prayer and Celebration Event and Pro-Life Impact Awards Ceremony. So yeah, I can tell you about how the, you know, the nominations process and how who are the six organizations on the ballot this year.
And first, I want to ask you a broad question, because you know your role both as a communicator and in this case as the president of the National Prayer Luncheon for Life. By the way, I'm sorry, Karen, but remind me, what's the best website to go to right now to look at it, to find out more and to vote?
Yes, it is. Everything is on nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org.
Okay.
We've got the six nominees. We have their paragraphs about them. You read through them, pray about it, and then you push the button to cast your vote. You can only vote once, but it's thousands of people participate in voting and then joining us together virtually for this special hour.
Okay, nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org. I'll make sure we say that a couple times, and I'll put it up on social media. So, Karen, before we get into the six efforts that were nominated, but I want to ask you a broad question, because, again, you're a communicator, you're a professional, you're pro-life, motivated by your great faith and belief. How do you feel after, I mean, this is the first luncheon after Dobbs and after Roe v. Wade's reversed. And, you know, we've talked about it on the show. You know, I've talked about it off the air. It's kind of funny, right? I mean, it's like the dog that caught the car. I mean, we're kind of like, oh, wait, now we're in this period after we sort of had a target. If you wanted to say, you know, we had a boogeyman, it was Roe v. Wade. Well, it's gone now. And now we're, I don't know, building the culture of life. How are you finding that? And how is it going? And what do you think about where we are?
Oh, my goodness, Ed. So,
I know we need about 10 hours, but I mean, we'll just do like 30 seconds, but go ahead.
Well, and I think you may have been alive when the road decision was handed down. Also, I have a vivid memory of it as a 10-year-old. It was first handed down. And thankfully for me, I've been working in the movement 34 years, but early in the 90s, I went to Mark Crutcher's life activist seminars.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Late Mark Crutcher, by the way, a terrible tragedy. He passed away just in the last couple of weeks. It's horrendous. Anyway, keep going.
Yes, March 9th he did, and God rest his soul. But he talked about, you know, struggles, civil rights struggles, and social injustice struggles throughout the centuries, throughout history. And he basically made kind of what I consider a prophetic, you know, statement back then, where he said, you know what, I will give Roe 50 years. And I remember thinking at that time, we had just hit 20 years of this horror in our country. How could it be even possible that this even happens even today? And I thought then, no, Lord, no, we have to do this for 30 more years. But okay, you know, if that's what it takes. So I never lost sight of that. And I always believed that, you know, injustice doesn't last forever. So we worked hard toward that. And I mean, I think everyone was getting discouraged until we started to see the changes on the court. And then it became reality. Year ago, this is going to happen. Roe is going to fall before year 50. Praise be to God. So it's the first domino. It had to fall. It had to fall. But what did the court do? The court didn't give us everything we wanted. We wanted the court to overturn Roe. And because there is no right, there's no right in the Constitution for abortion. It does not exist. So why didn't the court say there is no constitutional right to abortion? Therefore, abortion is illegal and nullified across all 50 states. That's not what the court did. They sent it back to the states. And honestly, Ed, you've seen it. I've seen it. The battle, it's as if it's intensified.
Right.
And
right.
We've started the second chapter, and it's 50 intense battles in 50 states. And and it's a spiritual war. I mean, this is spiritual. And the other side is unleashed, you know, because their sacred cow, which was Roe, fell. So we soldier on undeterred.
Well, and we're talking with Karen Garnett, by the way, again, it's nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org, nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org. It's in a week or so, a little bit more in the week, but, voting only goes until this Saturday. Let me get my calendar out of 13, 14, 15, 15. Is it the 16th, 15th?
15th. Saturday
like
night.
A tax day.
Yeah. Saturday night, Karen. The 15th. Yes. Everyone has, we encourage everybody to, take the time during, as soon as you've listened, go to National Prayer Luncheon for Life, read and vote. But if you need to wait till the weekend, you have all day Saturday.
You're not like the IRS. You don't give until like the 17th. All right. But Karen, give us a rundown on, first of all, set up the sort of context, the contours of how you ended up with six, who they are briefly, and kind of what it means. I think it's important for people. It's kind of like you're the vision. And again, as you mentioned, you're a CEO, vision of empowering, groups. So walk us through that and who the six are real quickly.
Yes. Yes. So, you've had Brett Atterbury, my CEO, your show. He is a metrics guy. He comes from the business world. He just wrote the book, Your Pro-Life Bottom Line.
Right.
And
right.
He said, okay, people are always looking for high impact metrics, measurable results, measurable reach. And so what we do with this is we open up what we call nomination season in the fall, because we want to hear about, including organizations we haven't heard of, local pro-life organizations who are making a major impact, who have metrics. And so nomination season happened. We got 120 organizations nominated at the national, state, and local level. We, like we do each year, we pray over those nominations and ask the Holy Spirit to guide us as to who will be on the ballot for this year. And the $100,000 grants, all six, everybody's a winner. There's a 50, a 20,000, 15,000, and then three at 5,000. And it's all, again, based on voting. You, the pro-life community, get to make these decisions led by the Holy Spirit. Again, by midnight on April 15th, please cast your vote. So this year, the nominees, they're very diverse, and it's just awesome when you think about our movement and all the different facets, all the different strategies are needed. So I will list these in alphabetical order, just like they are on our website. The Abortion Survivors Network, which is led by Melissa Oden out of Kansas City. Missouri.
Yep. She's been on the show. Amazing lady. Yeah, amazing lady. Right.
It's the only one of its kind that ministers to those who have survived abortions in the womb. So they're the first one, Abortion Survivors Network. Number two, Equal Rights Institute, which is led by Josh Brom out of North Carolina. Amazing international reach, pro-life apologetics organization. And I'm talking about changing minds and changing hearts on abortion. The third one is Good Counsel Homes, which is led by Chris Bell out of the New Jersey, New York area. And this is a beautiful, my goodness, the ministry. They have served over 8,000 homeless pregnant women, and not only in their four homes, but they've helped open maternity homes, nine homes in eight additional states. And they offer a post-abortion healing program called Lumina, because they found that over half of the mothers who come to them have experienced abortions. When you get healed from abortion, it breaks the cycle of repeat abortion and intergenerational abortions. Mm. The next one is Human Life Alliance, which is led by Joe Langfeld out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yep. And goodness, I think anybody who's been in the movement any amount of time, this organization has been serving for 46 years, and they are the ones who first did the She's a Child, Not a Choice newspaper supplements in the early 90s. So they're an educational organization, mainly with print materials, but also digital, reaching, again, international reach, 88 countries, millions of people, especially high school students and college students. Then we have, this is the first time a locally nominated organization has been selected as a finalist. It's Natural Women's Health out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is led by Dr. Monique Ruberu. And her story about conversion from typical type of, OBGYN training to completely 100% natural, holistic women's health care. And she also does abortion pill reversal. It's amazing the work that she's doing, having served over 2,000 patients. And then lastly, I know you know Bridget Van Veen.
Yeah, of course. Everybody knows Bridget.
CEO and vision leader for Thrive Express Women's Healthcare. And Thrive is on the ballot. They are creating the first viable national counter brand to Planned Parenthood in 50 years. It's never been done. And they were in the lead at what you all know as the Missouri Miracle, driving Planned Parenthood out of Missouri 2019, 3 years before Roe fell. So that's it. Six. That's the six as quickly as I can go through them for you.
And to be clear, again, Karen Garnett is our guest. And Karen, to be clear, the purpose is nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org. You can go there and vote. And the votes count. If the people vote for something, if lots of people pay attention and go vote, that's what counts. The goal here was to say, hey, we're going to bring everybody together. We are going to fundraise. You're going to raise money to do this, but then you're going to distribute the funds. And so the winners are going to get funds and get they've applied with a vision for what they were going to do. So it's kind of you're participating not in raising money for something in the future. You're going to see it right there. And you can, by the way, you could be there if you get to Dallas on Friday. You can be there, but you can also be online.
Right. And honestly, Ed, the hour itself is not a fundraiser. We do not solicit funds the hour at all. It is a prayer hour, and it's led by prayer leaders. This year, Catherine Hadro from EWTN is our MC, and our prayer leaders are, we always have a bishop. So Bishop Greg Kelly from the Diocese of Dallas, he's our Episcopal prayer leader. We have Aurora Tinajero, who is the National Coordinator for Latinas por la Vida. We always have a Spanish speaking to deliver the message and a prayer in both English and Spanish. We have Christina Bennett, who is coming to represent Lila Rose from Live Action. This is really cool. It happened last year. Kristen Hawkins came to speak and pray and cheer on the new finalists, because Students for Life won the Pro-Life Impact Award and the $50,000 grant in 2021. So Kristen came and spoke. Christina Bennett is going to come and do that for Live Action this year. Live Action won last year. Lila has a conflict the evening before that she can't get to Dallas. And then Christina also has an amazing story of her own. And she speaks to the Black community, you know, it's so targeted by Planned Parenthood. Right. And then finally, wrapping that up is Pastor Bruce Kendrick, who is the director of Life Initiatives at the local Watermark Community Church here in Dallas. He is a father of 9 children, including several who have been adopted and fostered. So that's the first 45 minutes. It is prayer. It is inspiration. And then the announcement and the live presentation. We do absolutely welcome help with giving the grants away through sponsorships. All of that is available on our website, nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org. But it truly is an invitation really for unity. It's just to give us an opportunity once a year for all of us to do that 1 hour together from wherever we are, right, and 12 to 1 Central Time.
Great. All right. Listen, Karen Garnett, I'm out of time. I got to run. Karen Garnett, I will put this up. I encourage people, first of all, go and vote for these great groups and these great efforts, but also get familiar with the organization, what Karen's doing, what her work broadly is doing, and especially the emphasis on prayer. I really appreciate it. Thank you, Karen. As always, God bless your work, and we'll look forward to getting a report afterwards.
Thank you so much, Ed. And one other place is our National Prayer Luncheon for Life Facebook page. So it's easy to share. It's easy to share things from our Facebook page postings, but voting is on the website. So thank you again.
All right. Karen Garnett, everybody, we will take a break and be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment. Welcome back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Our next guest, I've been looking forward to this. As my listeners know, sir, our next guest is a professor of politics at George Fox University. His name is Mark David Hall. He's also on the faculty, I guess, as an associate faculty over at Emory University, Baylor University also. And his new book, which is what I love. My listeners know I love books, and I love that I get them sent to me and I can read through them. It is from Fidelis Books, which is an imprint of our friends at Post Hill Press, and the book is called Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land: How Christianity Has Advanced Freedom and Equality for All Americans. So first of all, Professor Mark David Hall, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thanks so much for having me.
It seems a little bit out of fashion to be as clear as you are in this book about Christianity being a positive. And I'm not teasing at all. Right now, Christianity is in that period. I think it does ebb and flow a bit in the popular press and all, but it's kind of viewed negatively. It's exploitative. It's been used by too many people to take advantage of people. I guess, you know, you're a professor of politics as well as I'm sure history. Are we in this? Is it an ebb and flow? Are we in a particularly challenging time? It feels like it.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been a pretty steep downhill ride since the mid-20th century, when I think it's fair to say that fairly secular progressives took over the academy. And so when they write histories, when they write about politics, they tend to assume that Christianity is it's a repressive force. It's a bad thing. It's something that needs to be overcome. And things have only taken off in the 21st century, right? The 1619 Project, maybe most obvious, you know, wanting to understand all of America, American history through the lens of slavery and racism, that sort of thing. So this book is aimed at pushing back against all that. And I argue a strong thesis that Christianity has been a force for good, especially with respect to freedom and equality in America.
Again, our guest right now is Mark David Hall. He's the Herbert Hoover Distinguished Professor of Politics over at George Fox University. And when I look at your text, and this book is Proclaim Liberty Throughout All the Land. When I look at this, you make a point that Christians were at the forefront of what the term I use is making a more perfect union. In other words, we started out in our Constitution, we acknowledged we've got to make a more perfect union. It was imperfect. And that to me, that was a very Christian admission. But, you know, you point out it was Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It was Reverend Ralph Abernathy. It was Reverend Andrew Young. They were explicitly motivated by their faith, and it was a Christian movement. That wasn't 100 years ago. That was, you know, 40 years ago. And yet, now, the movements that assert equality and assert more rights are not even remotely. They don't even, it's not even the Reverend. I don't think Reverend Al Sharpton even pretends anymore.
No, I think that's right. And as you know, from my book, I begin with the Pilgrims and Puritans and argue that folks who are attempting to create a city on a hill. I've argued in my last book, Did America Have a Christian Founding?, that our founders were profoundly influenced by Christianity. When they created our experiment in constitutional self-governance, we have the abolitionists. We have the, in the 20th century, I focused mainly on the advance of religious liberty for all Americans. But you're exactly right. I could have easily had an entire chapter on the civil rights movement, and all of the leaders of the civil rights movement were minister of the gospels. And of course, you have both African-American and white ministers. It wasn't just simply an African-American movement. Right. And thank goodness for it.
Right. Our guest, Mark David Hall, Professor Hall, is over at George Fox University. Does a book like this, does it in academic circles? Because when I read this, it's not really, I mean, you're a professor of politics, I guess, but I mean, to me, it's a lot of history. It's a lot of analytical, you know, kind of analysis of how things fit into history. It doesn't seem like it's an argument. It seems like a description of what's gone on. But it doesn't feel like that's how academia reacts to this, right? Again, I mean, have we lost that much ground that fast?
Yeah, so I've done a dozen academic books with Oxford University Press, Cambridge University Press. This book and my last one are explicitly aimed at the general reading public. And so I try to be very clear, very accessible. There is an argument involved, right? I'm explicitly pushing back against the 1619 Project. But I would like to think it's completely grounded in historical facts. So I think the most progressive, angry atheist can read my book and would have a hard time arguing with it.
I think that's right. And I think a lot of it is sort of self-evident. Back for a second to the text itself. In one of the chapters, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find my notes. Yes, there it is. You talk about the evangelical reformers. Lots of people wish for another a revival, right? Not just wish, but pray for a revival and pray for, you know, that there would be a period in our there are periods in our history that we describe as these periods of awakening and people, you know, returning to the study of scripture and to an idea that of being governed by an external truth that was from God. How could that happen in the modern moment? I mean, you know, again, you're a professor, so you're exposed to young people, especially, and the technology and how fast it's moved. It's hard to see. I guess maybe someone around the time that Gutenberg was doing the printing press was acting like me, saying, I don't know how this will turn out. It's really going to be a problem, but it does feel like it's a problem right now.
Well, I agree. We need revival. And as you point out, in antebellum America, that is 1820s, 1830s, that's the time of the Second Great Awakening, where there were revivals all over America. People were coming to Christ. People were being convicted and repenting of their sins. And there's a profound missions movement that went along with that, but also a profound movement to reform society, to fix the evils of society. Opposition to slavery is one of the most obvious of these movements. One I discuss in my book that I think is not all that well known is the opposition to the Indian removal from Georgia. You had the five so-called civilized tribes, the Cherokees and others. And Andrew Jackson wanted to move them to Oklahoma. And you had petition after petition signed by evangelicals and all sorts of political activism aimed at protecting these Native Americans, guaranteeing them the land they had by treaty rights. And you just can't explain things like this in terms of self-interest. I think it was people motivated by the gospel. And so I think our prayer for today has to be for revival. And of course, nothing could stop the God and the Holy Spirit. If God wants there to be revival, there will be revival.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, all the stumbling blocks that you and I can think of are going to be, they're nothing to God, but it's easy to shake your head or your fist at it. The chapter on, again, our guest is Mark David Hall, the professor over at George Fox University, Herbert Hoover, distinguished professor there. The chapter in the book, Must Religion Be Stripped from the Public Square? And this to me, I'm a lawyer, so and I care a lot about these issues. This to me is the chapter that caught my eye in terms of what I feel is happening. In other words, starting in, I think you started out with 1947 or so. Is it Everson? Yeah. And then coming forward, it's a sort of activist effort, not just in the courts, although it's the courts heavily, but in the culture to drive out of the public square, meaning in my mind, the public schools first, but then just in general, drive out the Christian ethos. And once you do that, you take care of, you eliminate the education. And, you know, I joke with people that to me, the Pledge of Allegiance is brainwashing. It's just brainwashing in the right direction. When I make my kids say prayers, rote prayers, I don't know if they're having deep theological moments, but I know that they're directionally, they're going to be feeling and seeing in day to day and time, just like going to church. And they're going to, go to church multiple times a week. They're going to have that as a habit in their life. As long as I can control it, we lost that as we drove out of the public square, especially public schools, faith and Christianity. I don't know how you ever get back the basics of America without somehow more widely spreading that formation.
Well, let me just affirm that. I am a huge supporter of Christian schools. I don't know why any parent want to have their children in Christian schools if they can at all manage it. You're exactly right with 1947, of course. That's when the U.S. Supreme Court applied the Establishment Clause to the state. The Establishment Clause simply says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. In other words, we aren't going to have a national church. And by the doctrine of incorporation, now we aren't going to have a state church either. But that does not mean we have to strip religion from the public square. It does not mean there's a wall of separation between church and state. So groups like Freedom From Religion Foundation, American Humanist Society, they want to remove like the Blandensburg Cross, right? This 1925 World War I era cross memorializing young men who died in the First World War. And it's on public land now. And so, of course, the American Humanist Association says this has to come down. When Ohio built a Holocaust memorial, it wanted to include the Star of David in the Holocaust memorial. And of course, the Freedom From Religion Foundation people said, no, you can't do that. There's a wall of separation between church and state. Well, fortunately, the federal courts have come around to, I think, a sensible understanding of the Establishment Clause. And so the Blandensburg Cross was found to be constitutional by a vote of 7-2. Ohio ignored the Freedom From Religion Foundation. We're seeing public funds going to private religious schools on the same terms as other private schools. It's, I think we're actually sitting in a pretty good place right now with respect to the federal judiciary and the Establishment Clause.
Well, I hope so. And I think the one thing that I would say is that when you watch like the 1619 Project, and as you say, you're explicitly kind of countering that by saying, oh, here's the history. What you do find, though, is that people, I get disconcerted at the number of people that don't realize they're being fed a line, you know, and that suddenly, you know, the 1619, because it was in the New York Times, is somehow credible when a lot of it seems not only incredible, but lacking in credibility. I have to leave it there. Mark David Hall, he's the Herbert Hoover Distinguished Professor of Politics at George Fox University. His book is Proclaim Liberty Throughout the Land, How Christianity Has Advanced Freedom and Equality for All Americans. Fidelis Books of Post Hill Press has this one out. Thanks for your time, sir, and we'll have you back again.
Hey, thanks very much. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. We appreciate it. And I will put up on social media links to all of both the website as well as, Sophia Institute Press, and a link to where you can get the book, which is everywhere. It's really helpful. I enjoyed this one a lot. We'll take a break, everybody. We'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report, a daily commentary continuing the conservative pro-family legacy of Phyllis Schlafly. Now, the president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Ed Martin.
Globalists feel that now is their time to pick the next American president. Bill Clinton was groomed by the world elite for decades until they made him president, and Hillary was to be their encore in 2016 until that was foiled by Donald Trump. Trump remains their nemesis, and his presidency stood in favor of America first and against globalism, world government, phony free trade, and perpetual foreign wars. Joe Biden was not the candidate globalists really wanted in 2020 and was nominated only after it became obvious that none of the other Democrats had any chance of winning the general election. But the growing discontent with Biden has spread to rank and file Democrat voters. Only 37% of ordinary Democrats want Joe Biden for a second term, according to a recent poll by the AP NORC Center for Public Affairs Research. Time is running out for Biden to get his numbers up with Democrats, and a long string of embarrassing public gaffes point to further mental decline for Joe Biden. If credible Democrat rivals jump into the race, Biden will have to participate in debates later this year, and it's difficult to see how he could survive these politically. The more intriguing political backstabbing is among the Democrat insiders, where the infighting is over everything from picking the location of the national convention to which primaries will be held first. The traditional 1-2 sequence held by the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary disfavors Joe Biden, who did poorly there in 2020, and so he has misused his power of incumbency to demote them. Biden's insistence on changing 50 years of tradition shows how imperiled his political future is within his own party. By installing the small Republican state of South Carolina as first among Democrat primaries, Joe Biden is trying to renominate himself because he ran the strongest there in 2020. Conservatives should not be lulled into thinking that our only foe in the forthcoming presidential contest will be President Biden. The Biden regime is on life support, and globalists are waiting in the wings to solidify their control in 2024. Conservatives should sharpen their message and hone their skills, because we're in for a fight.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. In 2016, the conservative movement lost one of our strongest leaders, but Mrs. Schlafly's work and her voice continue through this radio program, our work in Washington, and the influence you have in your own community. Be part of that legacy at phyllisschlafly.com. We encourage you to bookmark phyllisschlafly.com and join us again for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Welcome back. Ed Martin here on a Pro America Report. Hey, we're just finishing up. We got a couple of minutes. Let me underscore for you, Karen Garnett, our friend at the National Prayer Luncheon for Life. We just had a great conversation with her. I was texting someone about that, and they didn't quite understand it. Here's the deal. There are six finalists for a big grant, a prize of money. And if you go to nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org, you can vote. You can look at these six finalists, these efforts, pro-life efforts, and you can select which one you want to. And whoever gets the most votes will win the award and get a prize. And the prize is cash money to do their work. So it's worth doing. So go to nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org, nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org. Participate by signing up and voting, and you won't regret it. It's a great effort. It's a great group. It's important people. Karen Garnett is wonderful. So please do that, and please participate that way, because it is well worth your time, well worth your effort, and it's an important thing. So do that. And again, it's nationalprayerluncheonforlife.org. All right. Thank you, as always, to the great Noah Dingley, our producer, Ryan Height for our associate producing. Thank you to our great guests, and especially thank you for listening. Visit ProAmericaReport.com to sign up there for our daily email, the Daily Wink, and we'll be back tomorrow. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Talk to you then.
This is the Pro America Report on The Answer San Diego.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.